This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Your number is 877-217-5757. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with Zach Williams. He's a writer from North Carolina, and for the last few years, he has embraced a project that is one that should be told, and it's appropriate that it's out and about. His book is on what amounts to the 40th anniversary of the hiring and the death of LSU's football coach, Bo Ryan. He never coached a game at LSU. His plane crashed 42 days after Bo Ryan was hired on the 30th of November, 1979. But his legacy is immense, and it is an amazing story about what happened in 1979 and on the 10th of January, 1980, when Bo Ryan and pilot Louis Binscotter died in a most unusual and tragic flight that was scheduled to go from Shreveport to Baton Rouge, hence the title, 40 Minutes to Baton Rouge, and the plane ended up in the Atlantic Ocean, actually flying over the home of Bo's wife and his two daughters. 877-217-5757 is your number, and good morning to you, Zach Williams.
Yes, good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Well, it's good to hear your voice. I'm doing well. And what propelled you into this project? You were North Carolinian, and Bo Ryan was coach at North Carolina State for 4 years before he arrived in Baton Rouge. What got you into this?
Well, I was a youngster to about 12 years old, and I was a football fan, NC State fan, first and foremost. And, you know, Bo Ryan was the coach that I knew. I didn't have much recollection of Lou Holtz, who was at NC State prior to Bo Ryan. And, you know, I just kind of grew up with Ryan into my teenage years and was kind of disappointed when he left NC State.
Well, Ryan was a wonder boy of sorts. He starred at Ohio State under the legendary Woody Hayes. He played baseball for the Buckeyes. They went to two College World Series, actually won a College World Series with him. He was drafted in both professional sports. He played professionally in both sports. And then he goes into a career in coaching, and ultimately at the age of 34, he's named head football coach at LSU to succeed Charlie McClendon. And Bo Ryan was a guy who grew up in Ohio, but when he arrived here, he said he was familiar with LSU because he had listened to their games on the radio with John Ferguson and others, primarily Ferguson, calling the action. But Bo Ryan, when he arrived here, he was certainly a superstar, wasn't he?
Definitely. He had championship pedigree. He had, you know, just working and mentoring and playing and coaching for Woody Hayes. And then Lou Holtz, assistant for Lou Holtz, and then had the good fortune to work under Frank Broyles for 1 year. I mean, he had all the pedigree, and he had never lost a game in high school. He was just, every level, he was a winner. So he was used to winning, and he was always looking for a challenge.
He'll always be remembered for what happened at his death, this weird plane crash. And certainly this is the date, 1979, 2019, 40 years since his hiring, and then his death 10 days into January of 1980. You were a young man. Do you recall much about what happened at the time of his death?
I do. It kind of shocked me. I was getting ready for bed about 11 o'clock when I first heard it. You know, this was pre-ESPN and 24-hour round-the-clock coverage, so when the local news came on, that was the top story, is that, you know, a plane believed to have, you know, former NC State coach Bo Ryan was on it. And all they knew was that they were trying to make contact and it was unresponsive. That was the gist of it. When I went to bed and woke up the next morning, you know, I found that the plane had indeed crashed. But it was little else, you know, reported, because you really didn't know a lot at the time. And it's still a mystery today, but certainly back then, you didn't have round-the-clock news coverage. And, you know, as time passed on, there still wasn't a lot of information about what actually happened. And it just kind of, you know, it was always in the back of my mind, you know, what did happen? Because you never really got the full story. So that's what kind of was the impetus to go forward.
40 Minutes to Baton Rouge, the story of Robert Bo Ryan from A. Zach Williams, who's joining us from North Carolina, where, of course, he's in the middle of Hurricane Dorian and what could happen there is not pleasant, but we're glad he joined us today, and we've got a clear phone line. And Zach, a listener asked, what kind of a plane was it that malfunctioned, apparently, when Ryan and Ben Scotter were killed?
It was a Cessna 441 twin-engine turboprop, state-of-the-art at that time. It was brand new. They had just purchased it, I think, about maybe 8 to 10 months earlier.
And when you say they, who owned the plane?
Nichols Construction, which was, a large corporation in the area that oftentimes loaned the plane to LSU and other entities for projects like this. And they purchased it for just under $1 million, like $950,000. So it was a new plane. No problems. Had just had maintenance just hours before. So, the mechanical part just has always, been a mystery. Like, how could something go wrong with a new plane that had just been serviced within, 4 or 5 hours of the crash itself?
Ben Scotter, Louis Ben Scotter, was an experienced pilot. It was unlikely that he made some kind of a mistake, but we don't know what happened. And there has been speculation from that moment, and I was there, and there was speculation that something might have happened to Ben Scotter, forcing Bo Ryan to actually try to fly the plane. Do we have really any indication what took place?
Well, there's so many different good theories. I think the dominant one is a depressurization of the aircraft, something malfunctioned. There is the theory that, he could have had some kind of catastrophic medical event that would have rendered him incapable of flying. That one is kind of suspect also because he had just had a physical. He was in good health, physical 6 months earlier. Of course, anything can happen, but... And also, some of the pilots I talked to think it could have been a combination of all of the above. Fatigue, we believe, is probably a dominant theme in that the hours he flew that particular day, pilots wouldn't be allowed to fly. He started like 5:30 in the morning and was doing some other routes. And then he picked Bo up 9 o'clock for the final flight. So you're talking, well over, a 12-hour day. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what kind of rest he got. And, of course, fatigue with anything can diminish, some of your capabilities. And maybe that played a part in not recognizing some of the signs that was, going on with the plane.
What was the altitude? Do we know how high it got? It got way beyond what it should have.
Yes, the ceiling for that plane was about 33,000 feet, and it rose to around 40, 41,000. And that's another thing that leads some to believe that the plane wasn't really malfunctioning, because when aircraft went up, military aircraft went up to view the plane, they did see lights on in it, which indicated the electrical systems were working. They did not see any kind of frost over, which indicated, it may have been pressurized the right way. And plus, it was on a steady course, and it didn't really deviate, so it indicated it was probably on, the controls were setting, where it was going in a straight line. So it seemed that most of the plane was operating the way it should have. It just didn't have anybody at the controls.
And you mentioned a military plane. At least one was right beside it trying to stop whatever was going to happen, and we know what happened, to no avail.
Trying to
get Ben Scotter's attention.
Yeah, they one took off from Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, which is here in North Carolina, and then they were relieved by, I think, some from some Virginia Air Force pilots. And then one or two followed it out to sea until it finally just ran out of fuel. They predicted long before, once they knew that the pilot, which was Louis Ben Scotter, once they knew that he was unresponsive and that nobody was actually, flying the plane, they pretty much knew and projected what was going to happen. But so everybody just had to sit there and watch. At some point, the plane was going to run out of fuel, and certainly it did.
And when they got to that very high altitude, probably both people, Ben Scotter and Ryan, were out of it. I doubt that they were even conscious when the plane hit the water.
Yeah, at some point, apoxia would take over, and they would be completely out. They wouldn't know what was going on. But prior to that, that's what the unknown was that what happened first to incapacitate both, you know, Ryan and Ben Scotter, or was it some medical event that incapacitated the pilot, or did the pilot just simply fall asleep? Because, again, we say fatigue had a big part of it. And as the plane continued to rise, let me back up 1 second, the last clearance that he received from air traffic control was to go up to 25,000 feet.
We'll spend some more time with Zach Williams. His book is 40 Minutes to Baton Rouge, the story of Robert Bo Ryan, former LSU football coach. We're back after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and our guest is Zach Williams, who has written a compelling book, long overdue, about the death and life of Bo Ryan, the LSU football coach, a superstar hired at 34 in 1979, who died 6 weeks later in a plane crash, never coached a game for the Fighting Tigers, but did assemble a staff, and we'll talk about that as well. And in the years since Charles McClendon was fired 40 years ago, after 18 mostly successful years at LSU, there have been 10, count them 10, head football coaches at LSU. And Bo Ryan was so young that it is conceivable that had he lived, it is conceivable that he could still be the coach at LSU. He would be in his early 70s. And as we know, coaches like Joe Paterno and Eddie Robinson and Bobby Bowden went on much longer than that. So Bo Ryan could still be the coach, but he died at 34. He's now been dead longer than he was alive. A plane crash on a flight from Shreveport to Baton Rouge. That's the title of Zach's book, 40 Minutes to Baton Rouge. It ends up going in the Atlantic Ocean, several thousand miles away. And curiously, Zach, it flew over the home where Ryan's wife and daughters were still living. They had not yet moved to Baton Rouge. They were still asleep in Raleigh, North Carolina, when Robert Bo Ryan flew over one last time.
Yes. It's presumed that the plane was on autopilot. And as I was saying, there was the last contact. He was cleared to go to 25,000. At that point, he got to 25, and he continued to rise. So you can actually pinpoint through records exactly when whatever occurred happened, almost to the minute. We just don't know what happened. And at some point, the hypoxia would have taken over. But we just don't know if it was some medical event that happened or if he just simply fell asleep. But as the plane continued to rise to 40, 41,000, hypoxia would have taken over, and both Ryan and Ben Scotter, pilot Ben Scotter, would have been, you know, overcome. And at that point, it was excruciating to everybody listening, air traffic controllers, coaches who were actually listening on at the airport, at the communications. Everybody knew what was going to happen at some point, that the plane was indeed going to run out of fuel and crash. We just didn't know when or where.
Well, I recall Paul Dietzel, the athletic director at LSU, who hired Ryan. He cried, said, "We're a ship without a rudder." And, of course, I'm sure he also was crying because Ryan left behind a very young family, a young wife, two daughters, and this affected their lives immensely as well, didn't it?
Yes, Kristen and Lene. I was about 12 and I think 9 at the time, and a wife, Suzanne Ryan.
How have they done since?
They're both doing fine. They're both living, the entire family is living out west now. Suzanne is remarried, and they're doing fine.
The daughters were put through school by LSU, weren't they?
They were. That was part of one of the things that LSU wanted to do. They set up a college fund for both of the girls, and they both did take advantage of it and graduated. And they're doing well.
Well, and if they were 12 and 9 in 1979, think about it, they're 52 and 49 today. Time does go by. That is remarkable. Bo Ryan had his children very young, and he was a young man in a hurry. How good of a coach was he?
By all accounts, he was going to be. He was a genius as far as what he did. He, you know, of course, he had the tutelage of some of the best. If you didn't learn from those guys, you know, shame on you. But he had the advantage of being around some great minds. And his forte was offense, the twin veer offense, a lot of which he got from Lou Holtz, but he honed his skills and, you know, perfected what he liked to do. And most of the people who knew him just considered him an offensive innovator, similar to what Steve Spurrier did at Florida in the 90s. They thought Bo could have done that at LSU in the 80s.
You note in the book, 40 Minutes to Baton Rouge, that until 1980, LSU had 1979, no assistant football coaches, no coaches on the staff who were African-American. LSU did not have a varsity African-American player until 1972. But the first thing Bo Ryan did was he, in that respect, cracked the color barrier. What did he do?
Yeah, that was awesome. He brought with him one of the coaches from NC State, Bishop Harris. And he went and hired a legend in the area, a high school coach, Otis Washington, that I understand just recently passed away, to be there, two of his assistants. And he also was going to bring in a graduate assistant, which was a player for his, to help, and it was Jim Stowe. So in the drop of a hat, you know, in the short time he was there, he had basically was going to bring in three black coaches that to a university that had not had one ever. And he just seemed to be on the cutting edge of things like that. To a person, I mean, just talking to the black players that played for him, they all respected him for that, you know, the way he always treated them as a head coach at NC State. And those who knew him, they were just players. You know, he didn't really see color. And during that era, you know, we were still going through a transition, you know, in our country. And a lot of universities were still, you know, not as advanced as some others were. And Bo just, I think he was just ahead of his time on that.
Dr. Hippolyte Landry calling from Jefferson. Dr. Landry, the former coroner. In fact, he was coroner at the time when Bo Ryan died. Good, and a pilot as well. Good morning to you, Dr. Landry.
Good morning, Jim, to you, and good morning to your guests. It's a pleasure to have you all both on the air today, naturally.
Thank you.
I knew Lou Binscholler. I was a friend of his. I flew with him.
He was a good pilot, I understand.
Oh, yeah, he was an excellent pilot. He was Bush Baum's co-pilot at times, and Bush had a twin-engine plane. I went to the Indianapolis Speedway and back with him, and I kind of flew his co-pilot with Mr. Binscholler, so I knew him.
Well, he was an accomplished pilot. He might have fallen asleep. Is that a logical explanation of what may have happened? What do you think, Hippolyte Landry? By the way, we're talking to a guy who holds a record for flying around the world in a plane like this. What do you think happened?
Well, of course, I flew around the world in a single-engine plane. It didn't have two engines. But I have no idea like no one else, Jim. I knew Ben Scott, you know, I knew his wife, and like I said, I flew with him a few times, and I just knew that he was a first-class pilot, and that airplane was well-maintained. It was owned by a company in Baton Rouge, and I'm like everybody else. I have absolutely no idea what happened on that flight. I know that they deviated to the east because there were thunderstorms between Shreveport and Baton Rouge, and they went to the east, but they kept climbing. Climbing, and that was it.
Well, thank you, Dr. Landry. And we'll talk with Hippolyte if things go according to plan in a few weeks on his birthday. But he mentioned Louis Binscotter was an associate of Butch Baum, and ironically, Baum died in a similar type of plane crash in 1987. Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on with Zach Williams. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. Yes, I know that quite well. And I remember at the time when the crash occurred, that they were in such a big hurry to find a replacement. I found that at the time to be extremely poor taste. Thanks.
That was Jerry Stovall. and it was recruiting time, and there was a staff in place, and Paul Dietzel did not want to get rid of the assistants that Bo Ryan had hired, and he found a guy who was willing to take on that staff, Jerry Stovall, which was difficult for Stovall, and that is detailed to some extent in your book, Zach.
Yeah, and I just, everything I put in the book, I wanted to be of positive nature because this was a celebration of Bo's life. But there were some events that I couldn't, you know, to tell the story correctly and to be honest, I could not, you know, not put it in there. And that was one of the issues, the way Jerry Stovall was brought in and how he dealt with the staff. And to be fair to Coach Stovall, you know, every coach wants to have their own people. I mean,
all right, hold tight. We're going to spend a bit more time with Zach Williams, the author of 40 Minutes to Baton Rouge, and then we'll hear from Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. 877-217-5757 is your number. Back after the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. In just a few moments, we'll hear from Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate. There is an election in 5 weeks, and we're reflecting on what happened 40 years ago. The book is 40 Minutes to Baton Rouge, the tragic story of Bo Ryan, LSU football coach for all of 42 days. 40 Minutes to Baton Rouge examines his life and death at age 34. The fact that Ryan never actually coached a day at LSU muddies the emotional waters, creating an unfortunate chasm between those who knew him and those who never got the chance. And as mentioned, if he had not died, he could possibly be the coach at LSU today. He was young enough at 34 to have been here a long time and to have broken all the records for coaching victories. And he was a young man in a hurry. He already had had great success in 4 years as head coach at North Carolina State. 877-217-5757 is your number, and a listener asked about the hiring of Jerry Stovall when Ryan's plane crashed. Bo Ryan, of course, left a big void, and Paul Dietzel could have hired himself, which some believe he should have. He was only 55 at the time, and, of course, had won a national title. He could have hired Stovall, which he did. And there were a few other people who were, I'm sure, in contact with Dietzel. And you note one of them was Pat Dye. Did he come close to pulling the trigger and going with Pat Dye, or was it Stovall all along, Zach Williams?
Well, that was a nugget that I uncovered unexpectedly. I went and talked to Pat Dye because I thought he and Bo might have been friends. Here in North Carolina, Pat Dye was at East Carolina, which is about 75 miles from NC State, but I wrongly assumed they would have been friends. They're close in age, but Pat said no, they were just, you know, coaching colleagues and rivals. But I was just curious as to why Coach Dye wouldn't have been on LSU's radar, and Coach Dye said that he was never on any, you know, as far as he knows, on LSU's radar. They never contacted him, and I just thought that after Bo's death, Pat Dye would have been an excellent, you know, replacement because they were real similar in some of the things they did in age and youth and up and rising. And long story short, Auburn ends up being the beneficiary of what could have been LSU's coach because Pat said if LSU had contacted him, you know, he'd have come running because, you know, that would have been an opportunity of a lifetime, just like Coach Ron. But, you know, to his credit, Coach Dye did say at the time he had no problem that he thought between the two of them, Bo Ryan was absolutely the most qualified, that he didn't blame LSU or anybody else for focusing on Coach Ryan, on Bo Ryan, rather than him in North Carolina. But, you know, they were real similar, and it was just an interesting find.
Well, it's an interesting book, 40 Minutes to Baton Rouge. And, Zach, I know soon, if not already, it's available for public reading. Your thoughts about where people can pick up a copy of this fine book from an accomplished writer?
It's available on Amazon.com. Again, it's done well in Ohio and NC State areas. But the challenge was trying to make it entertaining for three entities, Ohio, North Carolina, and LSU, with LSU having the, you know, the fewest amount of years associated with Bo Ryan, but it's such an integral part because that's where it all ended.
Thank you, Zach. We'll be talking again, I'm sure. Appreciate it.
Okay.
40 Minutes to Baton Rouge. That's the book.